Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cheers. To the poppy.
To the poppy.
We're here. I'm sipping on my, what is this, raspberry rose? Oh my God. Or rose. Or is it rose?
No. Mm. Oh. I feel like it would have the little thing
asterisk
on the E.
On the E if it was rosé. By the way, raspberry rose, oh my God, I'm going to say rosé every time now, is by far the best flavor. I don't care what anybody says of poppy. This is my, that's my opinion. Okay. That's my opinion.
I'll have to try it. I kind of like the orange, I'm not going to lie, so.
I like this one the best. I'm just saying. If you're listening and you're wondering who's here, I'll tell you in just a second. But there's a friend that I have on the podcast right now in the studio. And it's fun when you have friends on because it's kind of like I already know that we're going to go on tangents and probably tell like a funny story or something.
I'm sure.
It's more fun that way. I just like it that way more. But today's episode is going to be very interesting. It's something I have a ton of curiosity with. It's about childhood trauma and not like, I'm not talking like dark, dark stuff. Like we're not talking about things that are dark. And of course, if you have trauma in your childhood and in your adult life, you need to go see a therapist. There's a therapist sitting next to me, FYI. I'll introduce her. But it's about like daddy issues, alcoholic parents, divorced parent, like, you know, things like that, things that we've experienced. And Ellen's going to talk about that. And just like, what is the impact on our adult selves? Like, how does this show up in relationships today? Not in our childhood, but today, as we go into relationships, as we go into our normal day-to-day lives, what are like triggers we do and don't see? And then how do we communicate this with our partner in a healthy way? Because that can be very hard. And partners maybe don't understand. There's a ton. This episode is going to be loaded with goody goods. I have two call SIDS. One's a call in, one's a write in. One is a call in literally about this exact thing. So we'll get into all the goodness. But Ellen is on the podcast here. She's here and she's excited and I'm excited to have her. This is my friend Ellen, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here.
I'm also glad to be here. It's exciting to finally get a little piece of your world.
I know. I'm like, Ellen knows. We know each other through our boyfriends, which I'm like, how did we meet originally? Do you remember?
Gosh.
I don't know.
We went out to dinner, I think.
Or dinner?
It was when I was still in Florida, so it had to be...
Well, I always forget that you lived in Florida.
Yeah.
Feels like
a lifetime ago.
I'm like, I met you when you were here in Minnesota coming back from Florida.
Yeah.
Because you were finishing up school there, right?
Yep. And I definitely went on the boat a few times and we did some dinners. And then we had that crazy weekend in Arizona. Mm. I think that was probably our first like girly time.
Yep. That was so fun.
Which was fun. Jordan's like, I'm going to bed. And we're like, we're going to the bar.
We're going to the bars. And Ellen got to see me whoop it up, as they say.
Yes.
People call it whooping it up. I don't do it often, but when I do, I love to do it.
Yeah. Scottsdale City is a different city.
Listen, it rebirths me. There's something that comes out of me. And let's just say it's a good time. Not this past trip to Scottsdale. That was a different
food poisoning.
That was a different like down in the dump Sid. But Ellen is a doctor of psychology and she just passed. Congrats, by the way, on passing that exam, this like almost said psychologist exam, but like therapist exam, kind of all things, right?
Yeah, it's kind of similar to like passing the bar, like your med degree or something like that for your license. So it was kind of like my last milestone. So it feels good to be here.
And now where are you at right now?
So I'm working for a community mental health clinic and then I also have my own practice.
Oh wow. I didn't know you did.
Yeah.
That's like all yours.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So I do therapy and then I also do testing. So like testing for ADHD, autism, learning disorders, kind of all of those things. I do a wide variety of things.
Yeah, you do. Wait, I've never asked you this. What made you want to become a therapist?
Actually, this is a great question, kind of going into our topic today. Mm-hmm. I definitely grew up in an environment where I experienced trauma, big T trauma and little T trauma, probably both of those things. And I was around people that I could tell had challenges. And I, you know, of course, when you're a child, you don't know why. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, it just makes you curious about why are those people the way they are and really understanding human behavior. I decided in high school that I wanted to do this. And I never strayed from that path. It's been a long path since then. But that was kind of just like the thing for me is really understanding the reason why people act a certain way. And mm-hmm. and that gave me a lot of peace in understanding them and like moving forward in my own life.
Yeah, that's amazing. You talked about little T trauma and big T trauma. Can you explain that? Because it's been a long time for me since I've even heard those things. I know them kind of.
Yes.
But I don't remember like what the difference is.
Yeah. So earlier you said like we're not getting into the dark, dark things. Like yes. I would classify that as big T trauma. When you say trauma, I think most people think of physical abuse, mm-hmm. sexual abuse, and those are really traumatic experiences, of course.
Yes.
I think little T trauma, or what we would call in the psychology world complex trauma or complex mm-hmm. PTSD, is maybe not as clear cut. Mm-hmm. It's typically something that starts when you're young. It's ongoing. And there's not necessarily like a start and stop. It might be emotional abuse. It might be divorce from your parents going back and forth. It might be substance abuse in the home and viewing that, having a parent incarcerated. Even just like, you know, as you go through development in your childhood, like bullying or people saying things to you that made you question your worth or who you are. Mm-hmm. And typically those things, again, it's not just one incident. It's like over time. And that's, you know, when it is over time, that is when it really impacts your self-esteem kind of later in adulthood. And I think the little T trauma is the things that we don't necessarily qualify as trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of an interesting take too. Most trauma, I would say, is different for everyone. Like what I classify as trauma might not be what you classify as trauma.
Very true. Wow. And so you have to decipher that as a therapist, like always with people, and like what people consider, yeah, traumatic and what is not, or like, I feel like I freak therapists out. I'm not going to lie. I freaked them out in the past because I've been through some stuff. Like yeah. I don't share it all the time because I don't think anybody likes to relive what they've been through.
For sure.
But I remember I went to a therapist and I think actually this is something I wasn't even going to talk about this, but I feel like we should really quick before we get into
Let's do it.
People having a bad therapist experience.
Oh yeah.
I've had two bad therapy experiences and now I'm finally with somebody that understands me and what I want to talk about and what I need. Mm-hmm. But I told this therapist like my whole, like, here's probably all the things you need to know about me. I want to say it once and I don't want to say it again. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, like that's a lot, like reactive to it. And yeah. I'm like, I don't want to anyone to re-react to it. It's too much for me. Mm-hmm. And then I have to re-feel and open all the wounds right now today. Mm-hmm. And she was just very aggressive. Mm. And I stopped going to a therapy after that because I felt so uncomfortable. And I'm so glad I got talked back into it because one of my friends talked me into seeing a therapist again. She's like, trust me when I tell you this person is going to be good for you. Mm-hmm. But it's shitty when you have a bad therapist experience.
Yeah.
You like stop. I stopped for years. Yeah. And I definitely don't / shouldn't be stopping therapy.
Yeah. I am glad you're bringing this up because I think this happens to people a lot. And mm-hmm. it's a huge barrier to getting the support you need for your mental health and your trauma and all these things. If you're seeing a good therapist, they should be able to tell you, hey, if you don't like me, let me know and I'll connect you with somebody else.
Yeah.
Just like any relationship, friends, romantic, anything like that, you're not going to be a perfect match for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should be between you and your therapist as well. I would say typically when you're starting with a therapist, give it a few sessions, feel it out.
Mm-hmm.
It might always feel awkward right away. That's normal. You're sharing, like you're being very vulnerable with someone you've never met before. But if after a few sessions you're still like, no, this is not my style, I'm not excited to go, you need to jump ship and find someone else. Again, like I start therapy with that. Like if you don't like me by session 3, please tell me because like I want you to like me or I want you to like your therapist and I'll connect you with someone. If you don't feel confident telling your therapist that, call your insurance. I mean, we could talk about how to find a therapist.
Oh, email even. Like, yeah, you could email the office. You could, like, well, you could email them instead of saying it in person. You know, yeah, like, I mean, they're not offended, I feel like.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And it's not abnormal to not find someone right away that is a good fit. And so we need to normalize that a little bit. Like, it's okay to try a few people out. Everyone has a different style. Everyone has a different therapy orientation. And you need to find what works for you. I also think when you start therapy, like, don't hesitate to be upfront about what you're looking for and ask them, like, how can you meet my needs? Just like any relationship, you get to pick that as well. And so it should be kind of a mutual thing between you and your therapist. And I think too, Sid, what you were saying about, I don't want them to react and I don't want to share all this stuff right away. I think it's okay to find a therapist that over time you start to open up more. You shouldn't be expected to, like, share your deepest wounds day one.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That's not normal.
I was like, I don't know you and I don't really feel like rehashing this right now. And because I already can tell we're 30 minutes in, I'm going to tell you for 30 minutes what's going on. Now I just reopened things that I haven't opened in years and I'm going to have to walk away from this and, like, go back to my normal
and
life.
Process
so
that. Yeah.
No, thank you right now. No,
yeah,
it's not serving me.
Exactly. And that's not always healthy either if that's going to put you in a bad mental space. So yeah, like, I mean, for me, when I typically meet someone, I ask them, do you have trauma? You don't need to share details. Maybe we can just make a little note and maybe go back to that later when we're feeling more comfortable or whatever. But again, like, don't be afraid to set boundaries with a therapist just because they're your therapist. Like, you are not required to act a certain way or say certain things to them.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, shoot me an email. I'll find you a therapist
that
works with you, because that is so important. That is the number one thing in finding growth in therapy, is matching with your therapist.
Yeah.
It's not what you're learning. It's like that, just that relationship is going to give you the biggest growth.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that we touched on that because it's so important.
Yeah,
you know what
so
I mean?
Important.
People need to find a good therapist. That's exactly what they need to do. Let's talk about the difference between trauma and then complex trauma. You were telling me about this. I had never heard that before.
Yeah. So
are they similar?
Yes. When we diagnose trauma, it's post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. There is kind of this discussion about including complex PTSD or CPTSD. And it is more of that kind of ongoing or prolonged trauma. Like, for example, if you had a parent that told you you were an idiot your whole life, something like that,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, really where it's maybe more emotional abuse or viewing emotional abuse, like a lot of the things we're going to talk about today, like the divorce, substance abuse in your home, that kind of thing. Even living in a living in an unsafe neighborhood where you're viewing violence, feeling unsafe, I would classify that as complex PTSD.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that you experienced physical abuse or sexual abuse, but those things are still very, very impactful to who we become. And complex trauma is just where it is kind of ongoing over that developmental period.
Oh, okay.
I would say a lot of it happens within the home, unfortunately, but yeah, that's kind of the difference in terms of, like, I think when we say trauma, we think of those deep, deep, really dark things.
Yes.
And we don't classify the fact that, oh, our parents maybe didn't build our self-esteem or weren't emotionally available, or maybe we were parentified and we had to be the parent and the parents were not. Or maybe it's opposite, where our parents were so enmeshed with us that we couldn't be individuals. Like, I would classify all of that as complex trauma.
Okay, got it. That makes a ton of sense. And because I was grouping them all together, I didn't know a difference, but then it's like, how do you talk to the different types, right?
Yeah.
Very interesting. There's a call said call in that somebody left a voicemail and they specifically wanted to talk to a therapist.
Okay.
So I saved this one for you because I put it on my story a while back that I was going to eventually have a therapist. So let's listen to this call, Sid. By the way, thank you for calling in and being vulnerable. As always, I change the voices of these people. So if you ever are worried about calling in and you don't want to be recognized, which is totally fair, I would never A, say your identity, know who you are, etc. And B, I always, always change the voicemail tone so no one knows who you are.
I
so if you want to call in, 612-470-7569, that's my phone number. You can leave me a voicemail. You can text me. I prefer voicemail though. Okay. All right.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, Sid. This might be a long advice call, so hopefully I don't get cut off. You posted on Instagram that you'll be recording an episode with a therapist and you'll be covering childhood trauma.
I know, right?
I'm curious about your take on childhood trauma caused by divorced parents. I was 8 years old when my parents split. My relationship with my dad went downhill from there, as this situation was difficult to experience at a young age. Now, almost 20 years later and 10 years into therapy, I'm still grasping at the fact that my parents' divorce has been such a huge factor in my struggles with mental health and my relationship with my dad. His role as my dad shifted greatly when I was younger, to the point where I saw my stepdad more as my permanent father figure, and I still do now at 24. I scratched the surface of this trauma with my therapist not too long ago, and one thing I've realized is that there's a huge part of me that hasn't healed from my parents' divorce. I struggle with severe anxiety and abandonment issues and toxic self-blaming. My dad has been wanting to be more involved in my life for the last year or so, and I'm having a hard time with it. My question is, what advice would you give to someone who wants to forgive their parents or parent for their childhood trauma? Do I have to forgive my dad, or can I set boundaries? And is that enough? Thank you. Love the podcast.
Sweetie.
Literally so sweet.
Like, sometimes it's hard for me to listen to these. Like, yeah. It's like I hurt for them or something, because yeah, it makes me sad.
It's because you're empathetic, yeah, which is such a superpower.
I know, which is why I do what I'm doing. But I thank you for calling in, you guys, by the way. Like, it's hard to even say those things out loud, so I get it. But
yeah,
what are your initial thoughts? And we were going to talk about divorce.
Yes.
That was one of the write-ins, so this is kind of perfect.
Yeah, no, this is perfect. Whoever that was who called in, I hear you. Divorce is really, really challenging. Not only as a child, your whole world is turned upside down, right? Your caregivers are kind of the people who chose to bring you into the world. We had no control over that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of parents can't show up in the way that we need them to. It's funny, like a lot of the kiddos that I work with that have this similar situation, we often we'll compare it to like a puzzle with missing pieces.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how hard you look, you always have those missing pieces. And yeah, sometimes parents are like that too, where they have a lot of missing pieces and they can't show up in the way we need them to. I love that you were able to make your own relationship with your stepdad. I think that's really special. In terms of dealing with your own dad, that is hard because you know, she touched on fear of abandonment, kind of worrying about if this person is supposed to be this sense of safety, sense of security, and they chose to leave me.
Yeah.
That is going to bring a lot of anxiety with any relationship, friendships, romantic, you know, worrying about, am I good enough for this person to stay? We get a lot of people-pleasing behaviors from that. We might even do some self-sabotaging where we're feeling, you know, maybe you feel anxious and so you start to push away and then that person leaves in response to that. Mm-hmm. Kind of that self-fulfilling prophecy with those behaviors. And it is really challenging to navigate. So I do appreciate this person being so vulnerable.
Me too.
In terms of them dealing with this in adulthood, I love that they're going to therapy for it, because I think with divorced parents, that's something you're just going to carry around for the rest of your life. I'm sure you can relate to
yes,
that.
Yes, I can. Yeah.
I also come from a family that my parents split up, and you know, it's unique for everyone. I think for my family, that was actually a blessing. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's not the case for everyone, and you know, everyone processes it differently. Dealing with it now, you asked about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing is forgiving yourself.
Ooh.
Because you put so much blame on yourself for your parents' behaviors. And that is a classic trauma response that kind of like inappropriate guilt or shame. Shame's a big one. And so I would, instead of focusing on, should I forgive my dad? Do you forgive yourself for all of the times that you were bullying yourself? You become the biggest bully to yourself when you're processing a lot of this trauma because of that self-blame and things like that. You know, whatever you decide to do with your dad, if you feel like you're in a place to open yourself up and let him into your life, that's great. If you feel like you are happy with your life now and your dad being in your life is not going to bring you any positivity, then I think it's okay to set that boundary. Either way, if your dad is reaching out to you and you feel like you have not had the chance to communicate how you were impacted by his actions, I would encourage you to try to communicate in that in some way. Write a letter, leave him a voicemail, have it face to face, whatever you feel best. I think you deserve that closure of saying your piece with that boundary of, hey, I'm saying this and this is where it ends, or I'm saying this and, you know, we can go to dinner or whatever, whatever you decide. Please be strong in that boundary. You do not owe it to anybody, family or not, to be in your life.
Yes.
If they're not bringing anything to you.
Completely true.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you say, I'm able to go to dinner with you, but we're not talking about these topics. If you do these things, I'm out. Follow through with that action to your words, because, you know, your dad, maybe your dad is in a better place, but that's a lot to process too. Like, why weren't they there for me? Why couldn't they be there for me now or before compared to now? What's different? What's different with them? What work have they done? It sounds like she has done so much work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when we go through kind of that growth journey, not everyone meets us at the same end point, and that's okay. Not everyone is supposed to be in our life for the entirety.
Yeah. Wow. That was very helpful, and honestly helpful for me too, as I'm thinking about my own situation, just because I'm comparing a little bit to this person. I'm glad that they're going to therapy. I literally don't have anything to add, because that was exactly how I'd handle it too. Like, and I'm not the expert. I'm just somebody who has had to also work on a relationship with my dad.
You're very wise.
Yeah, thank you. I tried to be. You are too. But that was like helpful for me to hear, because it's a new perspective of like, oh, maybe I'm guilting on like myself, not the person. It's, I don't know. It's a very weird, complex situation to have divorced families.
Yes. I think with parents, like, we get this idea of like, oh, we're their child. We're supposed to provide them happiness. We bring them joy. I should hang out with my dad because it's going to make him happy. But if you leave that time spent together and you are not feeling any positivity, then that's your answer.
Yeah.
You know, you should never be going out of your way to please somebody or bring happiness to somebody else if you're not getting that in return. It's always about, you know, reciprocity or that balance.
It's hard to find that balance too. And I mean, so for me, I'm just relating to this person, because I think it'll help, because we're going to talk about a lot of the people's write-ins were trauma of divorce at a young age. Someone wrote in saying, I was 8 and I still struggle with the relationship with my dad. Mm-hmm. I was, 13 technically, I think, but I knew they were going to get divorced when I was, when did someone come up to me at school? That was really bad.
Oh my gosh.
Was in sixth grade. So how old are you in sixth grade? 11?
11-ish, yeah.
And I remember I was on the stairs going upstairs, obviously. I'm going on the stairs. And my friend from hockey came up to me and said, are your parents getting a divorce? Out of nowhere. And I just started bawling. And I didn't go to class.
Why do you think they said that?
Because I think what was happening is my parents were in the midst of their turmoil. And as they probably were for a while, and that they were seeing that at like hockey games, like, and parents, I think, oh my God, if you were in sports at all, parents gossip like no fucking other.
Oh yeah.
I will literally never be a part of that because of how badly it hurt me as a child, hearing the gossip about my parents or about myself from adults, like embarrassing.
Well, shame on the adults.
Shame on them. Yeah. I mean, I knew I could look at them and be like, oh my God, you're immature. Like, I can already tell. Or you're being rude to my mom. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like you. And I don't care what you have to say because I know you're wrong. I think I was like emotionally mature in that sense. I could recognize that. Didn't mean it didn't hurt though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in knowing that and subconsciously knowing my parents were going to divorce, when it happened, when they sat us down, I think I wasn't as shocked.
Yeah.
During the like conversation, I don't even think I cried and they were asked why I didn't cry. And I said, because I knew it was going to happen because I've known for years, you know, only like 2 years, but still I could hear my dad leaving at night, you know, and to go somewhere. Yeah. I didn't know where, or like was wondering why he always started the night on the couch, like to go to bed. He would like bring his pillow and I'm like, what's going on as a kid? But that happened before 11. That happened like elementary school. So I was watching this all unfold.
Yeah.
And I think I knew. And then that's when my parents got a divorce. And then we like moved, which first of all, I grew up in that house like my whole entire life on a lake. So that was like my happy place is the water. And that was being stripped from me too. That sounds a little bratty, but it's more just like my bonding time with my dad was going in the water. Like
it's we not would go bratty at all.
On our little old rickety, by the way, old pontoon boat, it had holes in it. Like, but it was my happy place.
Yeah.
And the skating and in the winter was my happy place. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden at once, everyone's in your fucking business.
Yep.
It's being stripped from you and you can't help your parents and your parents become two different people that I had never met. Bottom line, your parents change and you're watching them change right in front of you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're a kid, like you said, you can start to identify my parents are engaging in behaviors that are not normal, sleeping on the couch, fighting all the time. Like, you know, part of that, I think, when you grow up in an environment like that, you can identify that it's not normal, but at the same time, it feels normal to you because
I don't know any different.
Yeah. And so it is hard with the gossip with school. I also remember that being a kid and, you know, people always have their opinions. And it really impacts your self-esteem in terms of what are people saying about me, about my family, about people that I care about.
It's your family. It's your blood. You're like, shut your mouth. Like, and you're a kid, so you can't, you also have the weird dynamic of like, that's an adult. I can't like cross that boundary.
That's an authority.
Because I have manners. I was taught like, you can't speak to an adult like that, obviously. I mean, like, that's just how I was raised.
Yeah.
But it's just a weird situation.
Yeah. One thing you said about, you know, when your parents become different people, I think when you're a kid, you know, we don't like, I'm sure most people can think back and feel like when their parents are crying, like that's a weird experience, right? Like our parents are these strong people. To see them crying or to see them hurt is just a weird experience. It's uncomfortable. And one thing I think as being a child that goes through divorce that you don't necessarily think about is your parents are going through probably one of the most challenging times of their life. Like they obviously got married thinking this was the person, their forever person, and now that is crumbling and they're going through their own mental health things, trying to navigate that. And you're just like, why are they different? And, you know, it's not like they're telling you about what they're feeling or what they're going through or their mindset. And I think that disconnect is really challenging. If you have parents that got divorced, I would encourage you guys to talk to your parents and learn more about their perspective when that happened, because I do think that can give some peace in terms of some of that confusion when you were younger.
Completely.
Yeah. The other thing that you said that I think is really important to point out is you said I could already tell I was mature at that age. Mm-hmm. Most children who go through trauma are the kids that are called, oh, they're really mature for their age. I was called that. You were called that. Mm-hmm. And it is because you are forced to go through things that are not appropriate to your age and you have to grow up quicker to grasp those things. Mm-hmm. There is some maybe positives that come out of that. You are typically very empathetic, very insightful into your own feelings. But at the same time, you do lose a little bit of that childhood magic and that's really hard.
Yeah. It's hard to keep it too. Like all of a sudden you don't want to play because I was too like obsessive in my thoughts. I got OCD for like many other reasons that we're not going to talk about, other traumas that happened. And like, I had so many issues, you know?
Yep.
And after just talking about divorce and like, you wonder like, what is this going to happen to me? And like all these things in your future adulthood, which is scary because I literally remember saying, my friends will quote me through college, I'm not getting married. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting married. I'm not doing that. I don't understand how people get married. I don't understand how it works. I've never seen an example of it working throughout my whole family. I don't think I know anybody that's been just married one time. I think I know one. And I wouldn't say that all of the couples are happiest as a clam.
Yeah.
And what this person, just like, I know we're talking about this same topic and we'll switch the other one soon, but she talked about having a battle of a relationship with her dad still. And I don't have a bad relationship with my dad at all. Like mm-hmm. I'm very lucky that we have a good relationship, but I wouldn't say that it's what I had envisioned as a father-daughter relationship, if that is resonating with you at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I am someone who, you know, we kind of joke about the term daddy issues, but like hardcore, I have hardcore daddy issues.
Yeah, I think I do as well. And literally I have it written down, daddy issues, because that is what people wrote in as yeah. like, talk about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you don't have a father, or maybe that your father is not who you want him to be, it is really hard to come to terms with that. I have a very conflictual relationship with my father. I know he will never listen to this podcast, and that's why I'm comfortable saying it, unless mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh my God, nervous.
Yep.
Because it is still very conflictual, and I'm very similar. How do I navigate that? There's a lot of guilt. Yes. I typically spend time with him because I feel guilty, not because I want to.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
He lives in Minnesota, and so it's been a new thing now that I live here. Mm-hmm. Versus like when I was in Florida, it was much easier because we had that kind of physical distance between each other. So I think one of the ways that divorce shows up, or like maybe some of these daddy issues when you are older, is that fear of abandonment. I think on one spectrum that comes out a lot. It sounds like, Sid, for you, you kind of took the, how does this work? Fear of abandonment. I'm going to just isolate myself from mm-hmm. that situation completely. So I think that's one typical reaction that you might see in adulthood, where you're just closed off. Your guard is up. You're not open to it at all. You're isolating yourself from that relationship or that opportunity. I think on the other end of the spectrum, you get kind of like the overly dependent people, where maybe you're dating people who are not good for you, and you can know that, but you're staying with them anyways because you don't want them to leave you.
That was also what I was doing simultaneously.
Yes.
Yeah, super good.
Yeah.
I can laugh about it, but like, yeah, seriously.
We can laugh now because we're in healthy relationships, but yeah, it took a long time to get here.
And they exist, my friends. They are real. We're living proof that there are healthy relationships out there. I didn't believe it. I'm telling you, if you don't believe it right now, please give it a little bit of time. There's a little, I'll share something of my perspective on that later, but just like, yes, FYI.
I do have some thoughts on that too, so I'm glad we'll get to it.
Yeah, but, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to jot it down while you're talking about it.
Yeah, because I get that question a lot. Why do I attract the crappy men? And I'm like, well, but anyway, we'll get to it. But yeah, I think, you know, we get kind of this dependency where we're people pleasing and we are changing who we are to keep those unhealthy people in our life.
Yeah.
And I think when you grow up with kind of that gap of fatherhood, you don't have a role model of how men should treat you, or maybe you have a bad role model of how men should treat you. And similarly, you don't necessarily have a role model of how marriage works well.
Yeah, I have no idea.
In a healthy way. And it is, I think, really hard, especially in society today with social media and like the ease of meeting new people, instant gratification. And that, I think, is a newer probably challenge that we have to navigate in relationships, in terms of feeling valid and feeling that trust with someone, even though they're on Instagram and follow girls on Instagram and what mm-hmm. that looks like. But I do think that's probably kind of that spectrum of overly dependent versus like overly isolating.
Yeah.
So if you kind of feel like that's you, you might have to take some inside look into what's going on.
Therapy, obviously, would be what you recommend.
100%. You know, and I think there are things you can be doing to help yourself. I know therapy can be expensive. There's not a lot of insurance coverage, which is an issue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are things too, just like, I know we're going to get to triggers. I don't want to like jump into it too quick, but I think really trying to gain insight into why you're feeling the way you're feeling, why you're engaging in the behaviors you're engaging in that don't bring you joy. And I think when we get to triggers, we can talk a little bit more about like how to dig deeper in those things.
If we want to, we can go right into it because I think why not? And we can, I can bounce us back around and get back to like other things too, but let's talk about triggers because one thing I read written down right away was like, do we always recognize triggers or are they like not, they're just happening? Like, can we recognize them? Can we be aware of them? Like different things like
that. Yeah, no, absolutely. Good questions. Again, I think there's kind of like big triggers. Like, for example, if you have sexual trauma and then someone touches you wrongly or you're trying to be intimate, like that might be really triggering, right? Like, and those are maybe more easy to identify. Oh, this is hard for me because of my trauma. The smaller traumas that you maybe don't even label as trauma, I think is where we have a lot more challenges in identifying those. I would say anytime you are having a negative reaction to someone or an event or situation, that is like a huge indicator that you have something that you need to process.
Yeah.
For example, I would say one of my triggers is like people thinking I'm stupid.
Really?
Yeah. I think growing up, that was like a self-esteem thing for me. Mm. Like I always kind of was like, oh, you're like the dumb blonde, but I'm like, no, I have straight A's kind of thing. Oh. And like people would make comments like, oh, you're smart. And they would be like mind blown. And so that was just really annoying to me. And I can tell when I am trying to teach someone something or I'm speaking about something and someone corrects me or it's like, no, you're wrong. I often get defensive and I'm not always right. I am wrong sometimes, but it's hard for me to take a step back and be like, okay, you're right, I was wrong, and like, thank you for correcting me. And that's because in my head, I have that like, that guard coming up of those things. So those, wow, that's like, yeah, that's an example of maybe some like smaller day-to-day things. I'm guaranteeing that people are triggered every day to some extent. And so when that is coming up, you really do need to just pause or like make a mental note, put a note in your phone. I have a note in my phone where I'm like, okay, I felt weird at this thing. And I'll go back.
That's so smart.
To just stew on it a little bit. You don't always need to find the answer right away, but like stew on it, go back to it a week later. Yeah. Like in therapy, we use this, we call it the anger iceberg and it's
the
like
anger iceberg. Oh wait, I've seen a drawing of this. Yes.
So the top of the iceberg that you can like see outside of the water is anger. And then underneath is the actual emotion. Is it embarrassment? Is it shame? Is it guilt? Is it jealousy? And so when you are getting triggered, you have that initial reaction, but you need to dig deeper. Mm. Why are you getting angry? Is it because you feel like you're unworthy in that moment? Is it because you're not getting the validation you want? Is it because you're embarrassed? And that's the emotion that you need to figure out.
That's hard because in relationships, people are quick to react.
Yeah.
So when people are in a relationship, how, you know, and they're reacting to something maybe their partner is doing, saying, mm-hmm. like, how does one figure out how to react in those situations?
Yeah, that is hard.
Or communicate it, I guess, to their partner.
I think when you are in a situation and you're being triggered and reacting, like something my boyfriend and I tried was like we made a code word.
Oh, okay.
And it was like a word we never used. It was like zebras or something.
Yeah.
We were kind of going through a little bit of a rough patch and we were like, okay, if we feel like we're getting too elevated, we need to say the word and like separate and take some time to think about why we're feeling the way we're feeling. But I also think, you know, it's okay to say in a conversation, I'm feeling really overwhelmed, triggered, like elevated. I'm feeling a lot of emotions and I just need some time. It's not because I don't want to talk to you, but I need to figure out why I'm feeling this way before we move forward.
Okay.
You know, when you don't know why you're being triggered, it's really hard to communicate it.
Yeah.
And again, it's okay to say, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. Mm-hmm. Something is coming up for me because we don't always remember all of our trauma. We don't always remember all of our triggers. And our body actually reacts unconsciously when we are dealing with trauma. There is this concept. It's called, God, what is it called? I'm like blanking right now.
No, that's okay.
Take your time. Oh, it's called repetition compulsion.
Okay.
And it's actually our body is unconsciously like pulled towards things that we know. You know, if you think about why am I wanting to react this way? Why am I always dating the guy who's not a good guy?
Or cheating or something like that. Or like has those behaviors. Behaviors.
Or why am I dating a guy that's just like my dad? My dad sucks.
Interesting.
And oftentimes they're unconscious. And so it's almost like a habit because your body is so used to it. It feels good going to that thing, even though it's bad for you.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it takes a lot of time to start changing those behaviors. And the first thing you can do is identify those triggers. And once you know them, take some time. What do they feel like in your body? Is it, you know, do you get a headache? Do you get a stomach ache? Do you get anxious thoughts? Do you get shaky? Like there's all these signs that you can look for. And when you notice those signs, that's the time to be like, okay, I need to take a step back for a second.
Wow. I'm like, holy crap. That makes so much sense because people are always like, you date people like your dad. And I was like, okay, but why are we doing that? I don't know. Yeah. Like, or like if you have a great dad, obviously, then I'm like, oh, it makes total sense. And by the way, side note, I do have a great father. I don't want people to misinterpret how I'm talking about this. I'm talking general, but there's just, I mean, I would be lying if I said there weren't, you know, relationship things that we're working through still.
No.
And yeah, that's just how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, my ex-boyfriend that I lived with in Florida, I said at one point, I'm like, you remind me of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was like a what the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And bless his soul, we are separated, and that was the best for us. But it is interesting to kind of have that light bulb moment go on, mm-hmm. and I think those happen all the time, often when we don't want them to. But it's really just an indicator that you need to process and unpack whatever is going on.
I can like think of things now in relationships where I'm like, why was I staying? Or like, why was I triggered? Or like all of these things that I'm just like, that are kind of like blasting through my head right now of like, oh my God. And I'm sure everybody's reflecting on that too.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that Jordan and I have tried more recently to like, when we're in something like getting a little bit heated, I'm like, I react with confusion instead of anger now because I try to like understand that we know how to work through these things and like that this is not usually how he's acting or not usually how I'm acting. If he's reacting and getting hot really fast, I know to be like, this is a little weird. I literally audibly say like, this is a little weird. That reaction was a little weird. I'm just going to give you a second because I'm confused. And so I literally leave the situation. And usually in a moment later, Jordan is coming to talk to me because he was like, I've just had a really, really stressful day. And I couldn't answer your questions right now because I'm just overwhelmed. Like I'm going to have a panic attack overwhelmed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think you point out a good thing too. Like we often have reactions and need a second to find our response.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two very different things. And, you know, if you are having trouble communicating triggers or arguing due to triggers, two things I tell couples to do. If you're feeling angry, do something that's opposite. If you're arguing, sing it to each other. Put party hats on. Something like that where you're like, how can you scream at someone that has a party hat on?
I'm like, just picturing Jordan and I with a party hat on looking at each other like, are you effing kidding me?
Yeah, like it's impossible to keep that.
Yeah.
And so even if you just need that little break out of that moment, do something like that because you're not going to have good communication when you're in that stage anyway.
No, the good point. With people who have seen divorce, have seen cheating, like what is your advice for them in an adult relationship? Because they are going to be triggered and they are going to probably react with a lot of the times what you were talking about is the need, I need, I need, I need, and the clinginess.
Yes.
I feel like that was who I was for a long time.
Same. I think the biggest thing is when you have trauma from that and you feel like you are constantly searching for that validation from your partner, you are probably not feeling validated in who you are alone. Take some time to yourself. Date yourself. I mean, therapy is literally going on a date with yourself every week.
Yep.
Date yourself, figure out who you are without anybody else, and then go from there. When you are not feeling good about yourself, whether it be from trauma. Like, I mean, trauma impacts your self-esteem, like your mood, your physical health, all these things. When you are not feeling like you like who you are constantly trying to get that from other sources. Yep. And often that's when you're getting into the kind of hot water of, okay, I'm going to, even though this guy cheats on me, he's nice to me at other times. And they kind of give you that glimmer of what you want. And that's what keeps you there. Because the validation does feel good. We all want to be validated. We all want to be loved. And you kind of tell yourself like, oh, I don't deserve someone who gives me this all the time, or I'm unworthy to deserve more of this. But if you can figure out how to find love for yourself, that's going to make finding a partner that matches that so much easier.
Of course.
Scotty agrees.
I know. Scotty wanted to say something in the microphone. Hi, Scotty. What are you doing, buddy? Scotty always comes in the studio if I have the door open. He's just going to hang with Ellen for a little bit because he just loves being in here. Oh, buddy, you're so cute. He's just my baby. The Scotty, by the way, if everybody's wondering who I post about, he was the stray. So he was the one that we got from our friends who found them in a barn. And he's just the best thing ever. He's a little hilarious.
Him and Sid are in a dependent relationship.
We are literally in a very dependent relationship.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Do you deal with a lot of couples, and what do you see when you're seeing couples? What can you, I don't know what you can say to what extent, yeah, but like generally speaking, what are commonalities that you're seeing in like adult couples? Yeah.
Yeah. So
what was like adult couple? Like what? I'm like, as opposed to what?
Children couples.
Like what?
Well, so I do see couples, but I typically tend to prefer when they're younger, kind of like maybe 20s, 30s. I would say I do see a lot of where the female is very emotionally expressive and the male is not.
Scotty, he's bumping the microphone even. I'm like, sorry.
That's fine. He's loving it.
He is.
I think, you know, when you're in that situation, communication can be really hard because you don't always feel like you guys are on the same page. Like when we're fighting, I want to talk more, but I need space. And so I think learning about each other's reactions to that, oftentimes I do have couples reflect on their attachment figures, and, yeah, it is a lot from our attachment figures. Oh, well, my father, you know, never talked to me about emotions. And when I was emotional, he told me to get over it. Mm. And I think, you know, toxic masculinity and men not feeling their emotions is a big component in challenges with couples.
Wow. Yeah. And then they don't say anything when they're emotional because they don't know how to express themselves.
Yeah. And it almost feels like overwhelming to them, I think, to experience those emotions. And I mean, it's like a volcano. If you keep it in, it's going to erupt at some point.
I've seen that happen to people I've been dating, and transparently with Jordan before too, as he's, mm-hmm, I feel like I've helped him learn how to communicate a lot better, but there were points in the beginning of the relationship that I was like shocked at how poorly he communicated. And he, mm-hmm, knew that. We've talked about it many times. And, but I was an over communicator, like smotherer, mm-hmm, because I was like, why aren't you communicating with me? Like say something. And because I was being triggered by like, my dad doesn't have a lot to say.
Yeah.
Never really addressed what happened. Never really like told me the whole situation. Never talked about my feelings. Never apologized. Like, so I just have this like overwhelming like bother when, mm-hmm, someone can't like communicate to me when I know there's things going on up here.
Yeah.
It like lights my fuse and I used to explode.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's probably what you're saying too with like couples that they're like, I don't get it. Why can't he communicate, yes, with me? And really, he just doesn't know how.
Yes. Two things I want to follow up to.
Oh, I love this. It's like a live like therapy appointment.
I know. I feel
me.
Like we could talk for like 700 hours.
I know. I love it.
The first is that you said, Jordan has improved on that. And it's because you gave him the space and safety for him to open up and be vulnerable without making him feel judged.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I always tell them, I'm like, when you're ready to communicate with me, I'm always open to it. I'm like, I want to know how you feel. I want to understand what you're feeling. And I always dig deeper, but only when there's openness. I can read him, you know?
Yeah. And I think that is a huge part of when you're in a relationship like that is creating that space where you can be vulnerable. Because if you're just constantly saying, well, you're a shitty person because you can't say your emotions, like that's not going to make them feel comfortable sharing. Mm-mm. So really creating that space and working on it together. I love that.
Yeah.
The other thing is when you are like how you were saying, I'm triggered about my dad, or like when people don't open up and I know something's going on, learning how to communicate why you're being triggered. Mm-hmm. I think in society, we use the word triggered wrong a lot. Like when you're fighting and you're like, I'm triggered, don't do that. Almost as like a, just like, I dislike that kind of thing.
I've heard it.
Yeah. And that's not the correct use of the word triggered. Triggered is like you said, you know, I feel this way because of my past experiences with my dad, and this is coming up for me in my head now, and that's making me react this certain way. So I think learning how to communicate to your partner, hey, you know, when we had this conversation, it felt particularly challenging for me because A, B, C, and D, and I wanted to share that with you as like a learning experience together so you can understand me better and help me in the future. And I think when you're communicating that to them, you need to take it a step further and say, next time when we're in the situation, I would really appreciate it if you told me you needed time to process, or, you know, give them something they can do that feels helpful to you.
Yeah.
And then you also in return need to talk about what you are going to be doing to help that trigger as well.
Mm, very, that's okay. Yep. It's two-sided.
Yep. It needs to be you and your partner against the problem and not you versus your partner. And that's often what I see when they come to therapy is it's, you know, him versus her, or one partner versus the other partner. And they're not looking at it as, how can we attack this problem together? How can I help you? And how can you help yourself? Because we also cannot expect our partner to compensate for our trauma. We can get support from them, but we also need to learn how to support ourselves.
That was going to be my question next, is like, how does one deal with a partner that maybe doesn't understand the other person's trauma, mm-hmm. and maybe isn't hearing them, maybe isn't emotionally sensitive to what they're telling them. Like for us, I feel like cheating is a really big example because they're like, stop pinpointing me as the bad guy when I'm not the bad guy. That's your past relationships. That's your past with your parents.
Yep.
Like I'm not sympathizing with you anymore because you're pointing at me and I'm not the bad guy, you know, or like there's a bunch of, I can think of like 10 situations in my head of like where people maybe they're coming off insensitive to the problem, but at some point the other person has to do the work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I agree with you. And I do see that a lot too, where people are saying, well, I'm this way because I'm this way, so accept me that way. And you need to just deal with me. That's not fair to put on your partner. If my dad cheated on my mom or whatever, and now I have trust issues, that's something that I would communicate. It's really hard for me when we're not texting because I get all these anxious thoughts in my head that you're cheating on me and all these things. Of course, if you are saying that to your partner all the time and they're not cheating on you, they are going to get frustrated with that.
Yeah.
And so again, it can be like, okay, when you're out, would you mind sharing your location with me? And then I don't have to text you. Or do you think you could text me and you get home at night so I know you're home safe and I don't have to worry where you are? Like, come up with a plan that feels good, but also gives that freedom, because you need room to build trust. Mm-hmm. If you're constantly on top of your partner all the time, there's no room to even work on that trigger. You need that space for yourself. And so it is uncomfortable. Working through trauma doesn't feel good, like, but almost like the gym, right? If you haven't gone to the gym in 3 years and then you go to the gym, it's freaking horrible, right? You can't move the next day. You're like, oh my God. That's the same thing with trauma. If you have avoided it for your entire life and then you're like, okay, I'm bringing this up and I'm sharing it with you, it's going to feel like garbage. But you need to allow yourself to feel like garbage. Feeling bad, it's like your muscles, right? It's just an indicator that you're putting work in.
That's a really great way to put it too. And I think that's very digestible. And it's honest that trigger, you know, work is not going to be comfortable, but it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I was very uncomfortable for a long time working through a lot of my triggers. So yeah. I understand how that goes. And it was a challenge in the beginning of my relationship with Jordan, like a very big challenge. I had triggers from past relationships that I was bringing in. I had triggers from my dad or my parents' relationships that I was bringing in, past things that have happened that bothered me. I had triggers kind of, it wasn't about intelligence, but it was about like assuming I'm always wrong. Mm-hmm. I hate, like I get really bothered when like that happens or even, what was the other one that was like always really hard to work through? Assuming I'm wrong was always the big one. What's the other one? I just literally lost my train of thought of what it was, but I just have these weird little things that just threw me over the edge. But understanding why,
yes,
I think understanding that our parents are adults like us that are not really clear on our trajectory.
We don't know what we're doing as adults.
Exactly. And like not this like idolized person that we put them on a pedestal for and they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. So once I started to understand that, I think instead of like, and this is going to sound kind of harsh, is like feeling bad for myself and my triggers, I worked through them. I started understanding how I work. And I started understanding that instead of obsessing over how hurt I am that these things happened to me, mm-hmm. I could start to like turn that energy into like not repeating the pattern that's yes. happened to me. Yes. And I didn't choose my past, especially all the other things that have happened. That's what the hand I was dealt. Mm-hmm. So I just need to push forward because I have all the cards. I have the power. I have the tools. I've mm-hmm. got therapy. I have all of these things. I have an amazing, happy relationship. I'm secure though in who I am. Mm-hmm. I started listening to my inner monologue and voice. Mm-hmm. And now I can start pushing ahead.
Yes, queen.
But I will say I still struggle some days.
Of course.
I still get triggered. I still have things that hurt me or scare me or bring me back to feeling like a child. And mm-hmm. that's hard, but for it's sure. human.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I like how you said, like, I explore my triggers, just like you would explore like going on vacation or something. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't always have to look at our triggers as a negative thing or mm-hmm. even our negative emotions. Like, let's explore why we're sad. Let's explore why we're anxious. You know, give yourself some grace with that. Mm-hmm. I think when you go through this kind of, you know, self-growth journey, when you're going through your trauma, you do come to a place where you're in a healthier spot. And I think mm-hmm. you can relate to that too. And that almost feels anxiety provoking to be in a healthier situation because you're not used to it. And you have to give yourself that time, just like habits, to develop new habits. The more you engage in one thing and not the other thing, that's going to feel normal eventually.
Yeah.
So give yourself grace. And also, like you said, you know, you're still going to have bad days.
Yeah.
Trauma is not something that you ever forget about. Mm-hmm. And some days feel harder and some days you don't even think about it. And that's okay. And I think too, again, like I say this to clients all the time, give yourself grace. Like, you went through something that was so, so challenging. It's okay. You know, you carry it with you. It's heavy. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel heavy sometimes. Let it feel heavy. That's probably an indicator that maybe you need to stress cry. Maybe you got to go have a hot shower and do whatever to make yourself just like allow yourself to feel those things, because it's when we're avoiding them is when we're going to get into those bigger issues.
Yeah. And then they pile and pile and pile.
Yes.
We hadn't talked about this yet. And I just want to touch on it because people wrote in about it. People wrote in about alcoholic parents and how that can show up in life/relationships in the, like mm-hmm. having that in your childhood home and then how that may show up in relationships or how you might show up in mm-hmm. relationships.
You know, I think comparable to like divorced parents and everything we said about that, you could have similar reactions. Mm-hmm. I also think something with substance abuse is you're often in an environment where you don't know what's going to happen next. You never really know what to expect. I think a common thing for adults who have grown up in that environment is really liking like routine control. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up with substance abuse in my home also. And I am very type A. I hate surprises. I like, if there's an event, I want to know what I'm wearing. What time do I need to be there? Who am I going with? Like, I like to know facts because that helps me feel less anxious about it. If I can feel prepared, if I know what's going to happen, if there's shifts in the plan, that gives me anxiety.
Yep.
So that need for control is a very common response to that. I also think just like reactions towards substance in general, I would say it's more common for people to use substances than not. And so, you know, navigating a social life and the bar scene and all this stuff when you've had maybe really traumatic experiences with substances can be really triggering.
Yeah.
And so again, like learning how to navigate what feels good for you in terms of your social life, I think might be more of a challenge. There's also kind of the, that is your model. Maybe you drink to cope with stress, or you drink to cope with conflict or whatever. And I think there's, you know, there's that genetic component to substance abuse too. So you always have to keep that in the back of your mind in terms of what substances mean to you, how you use them, how you cope with them. Yeah, again, it's like really often that deeper meaning. And I would say most of the time people are using substances to avoid those things. I'm drinking so much, so I go to sleep at night. Well, you're not sleeping at night because you have 800 thoughts in your head that you're avoiding.
Yeah.
And so again, it's a really clear sign that you have something you need to work through.
How do you communicate that to a partner? Because I know we talked about cheating, we talked about abandonment, we talked about all of those things, but communicating, maybe the partner is the one who's got a really healthy relationship with alcohol and they have fun, and the other person is coming from a alcohol mm-hmm. household or a drug, you know, like any substance abuse household, and having a hard time maybe being around it, whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
How does one communicate with a partner and have them hear you?
Yeah, I mean, I think just being honest about your own experiences. If you have a partner who values you, they're going to listen to how that was negatively impacting you and be able to understand that. However, would I say it's fair to tell your partner you can never drink and have fun? No, probably not okay. I think it's okay to set boundaries though, like promise me you won't drink when you drive, or drive when you drink. Yeah.
Or drink and drive. Oh, yeah. It made sense to me. Yeah. Okay. It clicked for me either way.
Or like, you know, you're not blacking out. If we're drinking, we're not arguing. Like, I think it's okay to set boundaries around that. And if this partner has a very healthy relationship with substance and is using it in a healthy way, I also think that maybe you can use that as an opportunity to normalize the social aspects of drinking, and that it can be used in a fun way and it doesn't have to be traumatic. So maybe it's a little exposure for you as well to learn something different than what you grew up with.
Very true. I like the way you put that too.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Last thing about like triggers and all of these things, we had talked about like the impact of it and trauma in adults, like how it can show up actually in other ways. Like, yes, it can show up in your relationship. It can show up in how you react to situations. We had wrote down like your brain actually changes.
Oh, yeah.
Your physical health, sleep, and mood. Can you just touch on that before we kind of close that one?
So in general, when you have experienced trauma, mood, you're experiencing depression and anxiety to some extent. Those are components of trauma, but you're also at risk for developing, you know, multiple major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety, kind of those other separate diagnoses. Sleep is a big one. Trauma often comes up at nighttime. If you're an anxiety person, not being able to turn your brain off, having nightmares, that kind of stuff. And when we're sleep deprived, our mood is worse, our attention is worse, our ability to regulate our emotions is worse. So if you're having sleep problems, that needs to be your number one focus before mm-hmm. you're even jumping into these other things. Sleep is a huge one.
It's everything.
If you're having repetitive dreams, I'm a big person that believes that dreams are your brain is processing something and it comes out wonky because you're sleeping. But you know, our brain is trying to process these things. And when we're constantly avoiding processing, I think that's where we get a lot of the physical reactions. Mm-hmm. If we're not verbalizing and processing our trauma, our body will do that for us. You see a lot of people, like, for example, I have really bad like arthritis in my spine already and I'm 28. So like not good for my health. And that was a big like impact of just my life now, you know, growing up. And we see a lot of the physical components with
the cat's coming in here. Now my other cat's coming
in
here. I love
that. We've had the pets today.
He's a Bengal, so he talks really, really loud all the time.
I love that they love me though.
So I know they love you so much.
It is validating.
Sorry, he interrupted you.
Yeah, but no, just a lot of the physical health stuff, like a lot of body aches, migraines, all this stuff. Consider talking to a therapist if you're having a lot of physical body challenges. I would say too, most chiropractors and things like that might even recommend that for you.
The Body Keeps Score is that book, right? That
10
everybody
out of
talks
10.
About. Yes.
I love that book.
I have it actually sitting on my nightstand. I always meant to read it, but I think at the time I wasn't in a place that I wanted to read
it. You would probably
and address
find it very interesting. It is, if you're a reader, I highly recommend it. It just gives really great examples about how trauma can impact your body, especially when you're not allowing yourself to process that. Your body takes that on.
Yeah.
You're processing it whether or not you want to. So don't let your body take it all, because it is going to be really detrimental long term
to your health, yep, and your body and your physical health.
Yeah. Yes. What was the other?
I think we hit on all.
Oh, the brain.
Oh, brain. Yes. Brain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting when our brains, neuroplasticity is like, if you think of little routes in your brain, when we experience trauma, they reroute. And part of that is protective, kind of like defense mechanisms. When you're in a traumatic environment, you come up with these defense mechanisms to keep yourself safe. It's your body's way of, you know, kind of fighting that. And so your brain literally rewires, and that's maybe why you people please or do all these things. And so when you're in therapy, that is essentially the goal, is that you are trying to go back to the original routes in your brain. And I think that's one of the coolest things I love about therapy, is your brain is always moldable for your entire life. Whether you're 13 or, you know, 79, you can change those thoughts, you can change those patterns, but it takes time.
Yeah.
And so it is, I mean, trauma changes your brain, but you can change it back. And I think that that alone is like so empowering to me.
Yeah. It makes you feel like there's hope.
Yeah.
You know, like there is hope that I can rewire my brain and I don't have to feel this icky feeling that I've been feeling for years, you know,
as
many do. Before we head towards like not the end, because it's not the end of all of what we're talking about, but we're going to do a last call sit at the very, very end. But we wanted to come back to the topic of why do I attract crappy men?
Yep.
How is this related to what we're talking about?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, daddy issues, divorce, substance use, all this stuff, that plays a role in who we're attracted to. I mean, kind of like I was saying before with that repetition compulsion, we're unconsciously driven towards what we know, whether it's good or bad. So it's great when you grow up with these beautiful role models and this really healthy nuclear family, like you're likely going to be driven towards that. But it's obviously opposite for people that experience trauma. And we see this a lot of people who were abused then become the abuser, right?
Yeah.
And that is kind of that idea. I hear that question a lot. Why? Oh my gosh, why do I always attract the shittiest men? And I'm like, okay, what are you doing? And how are you contributing to this?
Yeah.
Because you are. And I think the biggest thing I would recommend for that is really assessing, what do you want in a person and how are you going to set boundaries around that? So for example, if you're hanging out with a guy, you guys are, you know, hooking up, texting, you're not official, and maybe you want to be, but he doesn't. set your boundary. Hey, we've been talking for this long. I would like to elevate. And if not, I got to go. If they want to be with you, they will be with you.
Yeah.
If they say, no, I'm good. And you're like, okay, we'll just keep doing this. You are telling them that you're okay with it.
Yeah. And you're allowing that behavior.
Yes. You get to choose. Everything we do is a choice. And so if, yeah, maybe a shitty guy walks up to you at the bar, you don't have to choose to engage with him.
Nope.
So really take, like, again, take a second to step back and figure out who you are, what you want, and how you're going to get those things. The thing you said at your live podcast mm-hmm. of you get to choose too. I think for so many women, we do have this idea that the man is dominant and they choose, and we're just so lucky to be picked. And like, fuck that.
I'm sorry. You're fucking lucky that I'm here.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pick of from both sides.
From both sides.
Both people have to have a mutual choice. And I always say that too on like first dates, is going into it and being like, oh God, I hope he likes me. Like, I'm so nervous. I just like, hope he really likes me. Like, I hope I'm like the one that he likes. It's like, you're evaluating him too for your match.
Yes.
You're evaluating if you like him, and that will change like how you show up to a date, like even just in like carrying yourself differently and more confidently being like, oh yeah, I have a choice in this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even with friendships, jobs, anything in your life, like you need to learn how to set those boundaries for yourself.
Absolutely.
And advocate for them, because you can't place that on your partner. And if you're in a relationship that you just feel like you're trying to please someone, that's not going to lead to happiness long term anyway.
No. And you have to show up as your true self from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Here's an example of like, just to close out this, like attracting the wrong one. Mm-hmm. I was showing up as the person they wanted me to be because I could tell who they wanted me to be, because they wanted a chill girl. They wanted somebody who didn't care. I'm so chill. Oh my God, I was so chill. Like, you to go talk to the girls. Chillest. Who cares? Like, you have friends that you're texting that are women that are, I'm pretty sure there's crossing boundaries.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm like, you know, and like, and then I'd get, you know, I'd have two drinks and I'd freaking like balls to the wall. Like, what the hell? Like, you know what I mean? I'd react because I'm not actually that. If you're drinking
and having that reaction, that to me is a trauma response.
Oh, it 100% is.
So red flag, everyone, that's your body telling you, you need to figure something out.
So a lot of the times when I was drinking around that time, I would have a poor drinking experience, especially if it was vodka, which is a downer. Mm-hmm. And I would react super poorly just in general. Like, I would get extreme anger, like come over me. And it would always be related to feeling crossed, mm-hmm. cheating, friends, different things like that. Mm-hmm. Like someone like coming at me or like talking to me funny. Like, I would literally like have like this like physical reaction of like, whoa, like who the hell do you think you are? Very interesting. So, but what I was just saying, yeah, was,
I feel like my therapy brain is like, tell me more.
I know. But what I was just trying to say was like, showing up as the person they want you to be will not lead you to the relationship that you want.
Absolutely.
Because then you're showing up as somebody you're not. Mm-hmm. And if you're not chill with something, you don't need to be chill with it. If you're not going to do something that they want you to be doing or acting like or dressing like, mm-hmm. and you're not that person, don't act like you are, because then you will act for the rest of your life. And unless you just stop acting in the middle of it, and then they're going to be like, I'm not, who are you? And you're like, who are you? I don't like who you are.
Yeah.
You're acting because you're appealing to them, but that would mean you probably don't like the way that they're wanting you to act. So,
right. No, I agree.
That's a large topic, but I'm trying to like, you know, bring it all into one.
If someone values you, they will not make you feel unworthy.
Yeah.
Being yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I've
period
lost relationships because I showed up as somebody I wasn't, because they were like, that's not how, you know, like I liked you, what I liked you for in the beginning. I've ended relationships because I couldn't deal with the things I was dealing with, because I thought they were okay in the beginning. And I've also showed up as somebody I wasn't, and for way too long.
Yeah. And I think too, even romantic relationships and friendships, I think all of this information can be applied to both. And when you start to really look at yourself and gain that insight and go through this kind of trauma journey and start to heal, not everyone is going to end up with you at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're essentially elevating who you are, mm-hmm. and not everyone wants to do that. And that's okay. But also, you need to be okay with letting those people go if they no longer serve where your life trajectory is going.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. Thank you for like talking on that too. We need to do a call, Sid, our last one of the episode, and then we'll kind of start to wrap. But this is another write-in, a call, Sid write-in. Remember, I shouted out where you need to write it in. If you're not in the US, you can go to the link in my bio, and or if you just don't want to text or call, you can go to the link in my bio and it says get advice. You'll see it on there. But this one says, getting married in October, found out he was cheating with multiple partners. I was engaged with my fiance, Hunter, for over 3.5 years. We were supposed to be getting married in October of 2024. I recently found out he was cheating on me for 4 months with a girl named Molly. It was from November through February. She also had a boyfriend of 8 years. They cut it off in air quotes because they both wanted to focus on their own relationships. I don't know what I believe. I also found out that during Pride weekend, June of 2023, he cheated on me with another girl. Both times I was there when he met them. When I was wedding planning or encouraging him in couples therapy, he was also cheating on me. I am so heartbroken and at a loss of words. I have no words to describe this feeling. Our whole lives are intertwined. We lived together, had season wild tickets together. We were supposed to have kids together and get married. I don't even know how to navigate this within myself. Any advice or suggestions?
Yeah, my therapist's face was not great while you were reading that. I was making a lot of... A lot of red flags. I know this is going to be hard to hear, but who you are going to marry is not actually who that person is.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge with navigating a situation like this where you are starting to see their true colors is grieving that loss, grieving the loss of that partner and the support that they gave you, because obviously you got a lot of positive things from them outside of this. And so losing that is going to be challenging. And also losing the fantasy of what you plan for your life with that person.
Right.
You know, the wild tickets, the kids, the house. I mean, that sucks.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
However, do you want to do that with someone who's going to be going behind your back, who isn't going to be respecting you or guarding your heart? Like, I think you need to ask yourself those things as, who is this man really?
I was going to ask, like, I wonder how many things they were missing right under their nose or ignoring on purpose because they were too busy fantasizing for the ahead in the future and getting a kind of ahead of yourself a little bit, like tripping over yourself a little bit because you didn't want to see what was right in front of you maybe as like really bad signs. And I'm not even saying cheating signs, but just the way that they show up in the relationship. Yeah. And I will be the first and not the last to tell you, maybe I'm not even the first to tell you that you can't change somebody.
Nope.
And even if you're like the nurturing type, as I used to be, you won't change them. In fact, you will get that. You will learn more things about them that will probably bother you. So you better freaking hope going in that you're not having to change somebody or fix them, because you will not be able to do that.
I think if you dislike something about your partner and communicate it to them and you are important to them, they will work on that with you.
Absolutely.
And in this situation too, like, that tells me that number one, this girl is going to find someone, if she is putting her all into a relationship, she's going to find someone that makes her feel 1,000 times more in love that she ever felt with this man. This also is telling me that whoever this man is has a lot of work to do.
You think?
Whatever trauma or his own stuff in life has caused him to treat relationships that way, treat other people that way, treat himself that way. I mean, that's pretty much self-sabotaging, I would say.
And needing validation or something.
Yeah, like he clearly was lacking something, whether it be in the relationship, but also in himself, to drive that behavior. So he needs to do a lot of self-reflection. And I'm guessing because he's done it multiple times that he has not. So don't love that. But I hope he can maybe in the future improve his life. We all have room for improvement.
Of course.
But yeah, whoever this is, I hope that you find your Prince Charming, because that man is not it.
You will find your Prince Charming, and it won't look like this one, and it will probably not look like it off the bat. There's yes. things that you're going to, I remember like getting in a relationship with Jordan where I was like, oh, I don't recognize this feeling, or like, I don't recognize this interaction, or like, you know, back and forth, because I've always picked ones yes. that were confusing or hard or not truthful.
Yeah.
I mean, so sometimes uncomfortable is actually a good thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, going into a healthier and easy relationship yeah. might feel really weird.
It did for me.
Yeah.
For real.
It also did for me as well. And that actually, like, I did a lot of self-sabotaging because it felt so uncomfortable. But really, like, if you are in a healthy relationship, you don't need to work at it.
Nope.
It just is easy. And it's okay to have some time to feel that out and get into that groove. But if it's over time, you're constantly trying to work and change these people and fight for something, like, if you're really meant to be with someone, it is not that hard.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I wish you the best. And I'm very thankful for you writing in. And thanks for trusting us with our opinions and your life. And I know you got this, girl. Like, yes. You got this.
Oh, she's going to find shitty. Someone amazing.
It's going to hurt for a while, but that's inevitable when you've had something so traumatic happen like that, mm-hmm. and you will heal. I promise you will heal. Ellen, this is amazing.
Thanks.
I feel like there's so many other topics that we need to dive into at different times. I'm yes. serious. Like, that's just scratching the surface. That's just childhood trauma and how you show yes. up in relationships after. There's a lot more
even
that we could talk about.
Things we touched on today, I'm like, oh, I could talk about that. I could talk for hours.
You though, and I so, both, though. Like, and it doesn't help that we're friends that I'm like, oh, I feel so comfortable. Yeah. I could just like gab. But where can people find you? Are you taking new clients? Can you see clients out of state, etc.?
Yes. Good question. You can find me online. Mm-hmm. My website is priorityMentalHealth.org. I'm also on Instagram.
Yep.
You can slide into my DMs. I would love that. Even if you have questions about therapy or how to find a therapist, I would love to help connect people with other therapists. Like, don't feel like you need to reach out to me just to work with me. I am seeing new clients, or I'm accepting new clients. I do. I'm a little bit unique right now. I do telehealth or in-home.
Okay.
So where I come to them. And I also do testing if you ever have like concerns or just want clarification of like what mental health stuff is going on with you. That's something I do too. And that's a little bit, you know, it's only like 3 sessions where we kind of do some searching and I can make recommendations for you based on like, okay, I think this is what you need to do next to really work on these things.
Yep.
So that is fun too. But yeah,
that's all the things.
Yeah.
What was the test that Jordan always wanted you to do for him?
He wants me to give him the IQ test.
Oh, I want you to give me an IQ test.
Okay,
too.
Fun.
Okay. And then
you know, that's just going to turn into this competition between
I know.
Two.
And he's for sure fucking smarter than me.
Mm, you never know.
I know. But he believes it. I asked him one time, do you think you're smarter than me? And he said yes. And I was like, excuse me?
I feel like you guys are both very intelligent.
I think
that's
we're
why
probably
work.
Sitting hand in hand.
Yeah.
But thanks for your ego, Mr. Mans.
Yeah. And the IQ test you can't really study for. It's like also, random skills. So who knows?
I love him because he's smart. So it's like he is a smarty pants, but that's just how he is. Anyway, Ellen, thanks for opening up about your stuff too. I think it's going to help a ton of people. And we have so many other things that we need to talk about. So yes. I'm like, we'll be hearing from Ellen again. Let me know how you like this episode. Let me know what you think. Get on YouTube, for God's sakes. I say it every episode. Get on there and subscribe if you don't already. And just so you know, if I hit 10K, and maybe I have by the time this hits your ears, I'm going to vlog. Like, I'm going to vlog a little bit, like just little pieces of my life.
We want to see a vlog. Let's do it.
It's a little carrot that I say that I'm dangling in front of you. As always, you can find my personal page at Well Said with Sid. And then my podcast page is at Well Said Podcast. There's different content on both, but they're still the same me. And remember, you can always get advice, write in, call in, do the things. I love you. I respect you. Let me know what episodes you want to hear. And I will talk to you next Monday. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why MyLowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.